through it all.
Another, the sooner we start, the sooner we get done.
Gentlemen, we need to get started. Some of us have a life. Mayor has a lot of dialogue.
City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman. Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the 6 p.m. time certain.
Item 1031, adopt and implement the North Interstate Corridor Plan and amend Comprehensive Plan and Citywide Design Guidelines.
In late 2006, Chris Duffy from the Arbor Lodge Neighborhood Association invited me out to tour Interstate Avenue. Julia Giesler, the planner who will be presenting today, was on that tour as well. We discussed the neighborhood's concerns about potential development and their interest in having greater clarity and certainty about the type of development that would be allowed in the future and what could be done to mitigate any negative impacts. Julia and other planners and staff from Transportation, Parks, BDS, and PDC have been working with the community to create that vision and provide a predictable future for the transformation of this area. Planning involved neighbors, property owners, businesses, realtors, developers, and others to come up with strategies and proposals that would meet community needs and desires for the area. The plan meets our goals for transit-supportive densities to maximize our substantial investment in light rail and supports the community's interest in seeing a broad array of services and opportunities throughout the corridor. Like any good plan, there won't be 100% consensus about all aspects. We're likely to hear about a few aspects of the plan that some would like us to modify. The extra height allowed in certain areas was an idea that emerged during the Design Commission hearings. I expect we'll hear from some who would like to keep to the original staff proposals for height. I want to emphasize, though, that the North Interstate Corridor Plan is more than just about heights and zoning. It's a package of design guidelines, special right-of-way standards, and special use and development standards that work together to ensure quality development. It will contribute to the livability of the neighborhoods along Interstate and provide predictability for the long-term future transformation of the area now and into the future. Can I please have Julia Gill and Courtney Duke please come forward? And after that, we will have four invited speakers.
Great.
Gil.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. Gil Kelly, Bureau of Planning. And I'll keep my comments very brief in an overview and then help answer questions later if need be. I think your introductory comments, Mayor, covered it very well. I would just sort of add a perspective here that we like in all of our district planning efforts, are working with the community of today for the vision for tomorrow. And the tomorrow in this case is probably accelerated somewhat by the presence of the light rail investment that we've made recently by emerging demand for new and more intensive development in the corridor, partially because of that. And it's certainly reinforced by the spike in energy prices and fuel costs, which doesn't appear to be simply a spike, but to be a long-term systemic trend. And that in combination with our increasing awareness about global warming is really forcing us as a community in a good way, I think, to look at our existing corridors to accommodate new growth. And this was part of the background that Julia and the other planners dealt with in working with this community to really keep their eye on this as a growth corridor, but to do that in a way that made it feel like Portland and made it feel have the quality of neighborhood that people wanted. So I think what you are seeing there is kind of a quiet drama, if you will, some increases in height that you'll hear about. Not so much increases in floor area ratio or overall density, but in height and the molding and the shaping of that new development. And I think in many ways it is a package deal here. There's a lot of design thinking that's gone into this, and I think some real opportunities for an enhanced identity for the whole corridor and for the neighborhoods that adjoin Interstate Avenue. That was really the context for our thinking going in. And Julia Giesler, who's been the project manager, will describe the recommendations of the Planning Commission in some detail now, and Courtney Duke from Transportation will augment that as well. I wanted to say we have four speakers that will follow me, as you indicated, Mayor. One, Andre Baugh, a planning commissioner who will present the Planning Commission's intent in their behind their recommendation and his own sort of personal, how he came to the motion, the majority motion himself, as well as Tim Eddy from the Design Commission. The Design Commission spent some time looking at this set of issues from their point of view. And we'll hear from the president of the both the Overlook Neighborhood Association and the Arbor Lodge Association as the first testifiers. So you'll get a sort of opening a viewpoint from that array of speakers, and then we'll take testimony. So with that, unless there are questions for me, I'll turn it right over to Julia.
Please proceed.
Oh, and by the way, just one little feature here. It's not simply about height and FAR, even street standards. We, in the rezoning process, as Julia will describe, we kept our eye on really making the neighborhood function in the way it wants to do. And part of that was acknowledging their existing non-conforming uses. This was a topic we heard about the other day in the Killingsworth proposal. And here I think we're addressing 37 non-conforming uses in one fell swoop. So wanted to just make sure that that wasn't lost. Thank you.
They certainly acted fast on your recommendation, Commissioner.
Complain 1 week.
You can just vote aye now.
See? Hi, my name is Julia Giesler, and I've been the project manager on the North Interstate Corridor Plan. Can I get this to? Yeah. This has been a collaborative effort, and with me is also Courtney Duke with the Office of Transportation and Kevin Cronin with PDC. This plan has a lot of different components, and so rather than dive into the details, what I'd like to do tonight is to give you kind of an overall view, and there are also quite a few staff from our technical advisory committee that are here to answer your questions if you'd like to dive deeper into some of the issues. We are doing this plan to put in place the development framework and zoning needed to realize the vision of this area as a high-density transit corridor to maximize the investment of light rail and to improve the livability of the surrounding neighborhoods. The station area includes a quarter-mile radius around each of the station areas in the corridor. It starts to the north with the Kenton Station, then as we go south, the Lombard Station, Rosa Park Station, Killingsworth Station, Prescott Station, and the Overlook Station. There are three neighborhoods involved in this study area. South of Killingsworth, it's the Overlook neighborhood. North of Killingsworth to Lombard, it's the Arbor Lodge neighborhood. And north of Lombard, it's the Kenton neighborhood. To see how our study area sits in the region, we're right here in between Portland Central City and downtown Vancouver. We've built these recommendations on past planning that has occurred in this area, starting with the Albina Community Plan in 1993. That was the last time we've looked at the zoning in this area. In 2000, we implemented the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area. And in 2000, there was a TGM grant, a transportation management grant, to look at the station areas and in anticipation of the light rail, and that was the Interstate MAX Station Area Revitalization Strategy. The MAX Yellow Line opened spring of 2004, and we began this project, which was initially called the Interstate Light Rail Corridor Zoning Project, in September of 2006. I wanted to talk a little bit about the zoning amendments in the Albina Community Plan, because that's what set in motion the policy that this would be a high-density corridor in the event of light rail at the time at either Interstate or I-5. And so if you look at the gray area, that area it has a comp plan designation for high-density residential. that could only be realized in the event that light rail was constructed. The purple area south of Killingsworth was zoning that was put in place in the Albina Community Plan. It's employment zoning. It's the EX zone. And that was put there because at the time we saw that as an area that could be an employment center with its good access from to Swan Island ongoing. We started our public involvement with gathering together a community advisory group. And our community advisory group, or our CAG, what consisted of neighborhood and business reps, property owners. We also had developers and architects and real estate agents and people just in the neighborhood at large. And the idea was it would be a diverse enough group that we could all talk about how development gets built and what kinds of impacts it would have on the neighborhood. This group met 12 times over 14 months. They were very involved in all aspects of the plan. We also held four community events, and those are circled in red on the screen. And these community events happened periodically throughout the process so that we were always checking in with the broader community and asking them, you know, what their input was about the proposals as they were being developed. And the blue box identifies the public hearings that we had. We not only went to the Planning Commission, we also went to the Design Commission because we had some design-related issues and community design guidelines that we had to review with them. And in terms of just our general public engagement, how to keep people involved, one of our most successful tools was the project website. We had over 30,000 hits on the public website. So on that site, we had access to the CAG minutes and agendas. We also had all the documents and maps and just general information on the project. We did a series of e-newsletters to a list of emails that we had of interested folks, and we also just did general information mailings. We did, of course, our required notices for the public hearings, the Design Commission, the Planning Commission, of course, this hearing. We also, because we were changing or proposing to change the zone, we had to do a ballot measure 56 notice to everyone that would potentially have their property affected by zone change. And we met throughout the process with the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Advisory Committee and also the Neighborhood and Business Associations. So the elements of this is our the neighborhood plan, the North Interstate Neighborhood or North Interstate Corridor Plan. There's several, just kind of walk you through the sections in it, what the elements of this plan are. We start out with an urban design concept. That's in section 2 to set the framework. We then have comprehensive plan map and zoning amendments, that section 3, and that's how those are the proposals for the zone changes. In section 4, there's amendments to the zoning code. Primarily that is to add a new plan district for North Interstate. And the plan district regulations focus on the urban form of the area, also making it more pedestrian oriented. And there's something else. Most pedestrian oriented. And so then in section 5, we have amendments to the community design guidelines. We're putting design review almost on all the properties in Interstate, and that started with the Albina Community Plan, where design review was put in place with the higher density because of the different scale of the existing development and the new development. In Section 6, we have the special right-of-way standards that PDOT has developed with us, and I believe you have a copy of the latest street framework plan criteria and special right-of-way standards that that they're currently developing. We worked in two scales when we were coming up with the proposals. We worked on the corridor-wide, looking at the issues from a corridor-wide perspective, and then we also zoomed in on the different station areas so that we could refine the proposals at the station areas. So if we go through the sub-areas, it starts with the Interstate Avenue, and then we call it Neighborhood East is between Interstate and I-5, and then Neighborhood West is the area west, and there's a transition zone you can see in purple where we have a transition zone to the single-family neighborhood zoning that's in the yellow. So if I start with interstate, interstate we know has the light rail. It's pretty much a use of pretty low intense uses, and one of the character defining elements is the remnants of the Highway 99 route that has the neon signs and the motels and the different restaurants that were along there. This is our urban design map, and if you look at Interstate Avenue, the red are the station platforms, right directly at the station platforms, and the hatched areas are in between. And the overall goals of the plan for the station areas are to have more opportunity for activity at the station platforms, but still recognizing that each of the station areas are different. We also want to reduce the barriers for commercial and mixed-use development between the station platforms. These are some examples from the Special Community Design Guidelines for Interstate Avenue that are found in Section 5 in the plan. These are some ideas of what types of development we could see at the platforms. This is a new development that's the Overlook Heights condominiums. It's in between the station platforms, and it's a little bit less intense, but it still has, you can see, the ground floor commercial. And the biggest barrier that we saw to the mixed use and development along Interstate were the nonconforming uses, because this area was very typical of a lot of long commercial stretches where we took the long commercial stretches and created nodes, and then in between the nodes we put high-density housing. And so in this high-density housing areas along Interstate, you had like the Swan Island, which is a restaurant. You had all the motels, the little stores, and in the bottom right, you have a house that doesn't want to be a house anymore. It wants to be a commercial area, and it too would be nonconforming. We had, as Gil said, 37 nonconforming uses, and we have legalized all but four of those uses. We also have created four nonconforming uses in the form of gas stations along Interstate. So the next couple of slides are diagrams of each of the station areas, because we did a lot of thinking about how this actual development in the station areas. But I'm going to just quickly go through and kind of highlight what the overall development theme is. So if we start in Kenton, it's the historic commercial gateway. The area directly around Kenton Station was, the zoning was revisited in the Kenton Downtown Plan in 2001, so this is outside of our station area. But there's a little bit of Kenton that still is outside the station area and outside the Lombard Station. And so here's Lombard. Lombard has the Fred Meyers anchors Lombard, and it's the retail and employment anchor. We also have Kenton School that is up on north of Lombard on the west side. Rosa Parks, probably best known for the New Seasons, that's located in that station area. This is seen as more of a neighborhood corridor. It's less intense. We've got more residential zoning in this area. Killingsworth is the main street is the theme, and we put the zoning in place to implement this Main Street concept that connects Killingsworth in this area all the way to Killingsworth into MLK. Prescott Station is a neighborhood center. This is one of the areas that we see on the west or the east side of Interstate where there's the most potential for a real mixed-use, vibrant neighborhood. It has a lot of undeveloped or a lot of underutilized land there. It also has great connections across I-5 to along Skidmore to Mississippi, so that's a good connection. And it's also relatively isolated from a lot of the single-family residents. Overlook is the employment anchor. It has Kaiser is to the south, and it also has Overlook Park to the west. I think of all the station areas, this is the one area that we did the most kind of tweaking to the original proposals, and in part that was due to the fact that it's more geographically constrained in this area, and the space between Interstate and I-5 has been reduced down to just two blocks. And so we, in this area, there's a little bit less density than in some of the other, as you go further north. So the next sub-area would be Neighborhood East, and these are some slides to just orient you with kind of the existing conditions. It's primarily single-family. There are a scattering of kind of these courtyard apartments that you see in the top right. And the goals for this area were to fine-tune the existing high-density zoning and to strengthen the residential character and to put tools in place to ensure a successful transition to higher density neighborhood. And primarily the tool that we used in this to do this would be design review. We have design review on all of these on all these properties. We knew that this was going to be probably the most challenging part of this plan. And so we hired Emmons Architects early on in the process to work with staff and the CAG to kind of look to do prototypes and look at how this area could develop. And we looked at what it would look like to have, you know, larger buildings next to the smaller buildings. We also looked a lot at what the different development types would be like as the size of the lot changed. So what we found was with smaller lots, of just a typical 5,000 square foot lot, you're really looking at maybe a 3-4-story building at most. It wasn't until you were able to consolidate larger sites that you were able to see like a 7-story building. But I think we maxed out at a 7-story building given all the other requirements that you'd have to meet. And as you can imagine, we talked about this a lot at our community workshops. We talked a lot about the zoning. We also, with the slide on the right is a Lego table that some of the CAG members put together to try to just visualize what this scale and how the massing would be. These slides are a project that's under permit stage. These are the Montana condos that are on Montana behind the Fred Meyers site. Currently, they are, I believe, 8 stories towards Fred Meyers, and they slope down to 6 stories as they meet the neighborhood. This is a development in the Mississippi. These are the Mississippi Overlook condos and the Prescott Station. And this is an example of the R1 zoning that's in the Overlook neighborhood in between Interstate and I-5. And in Neighborhood West, these are some slides just to orient you. That it's primarily, actually almost predominantly, a single-family residential area. And just to orient you again, this is I-5. This is transition zoning, and then this is the single family. And I think the thing to remember about the Neighborhood West is that over half of the quarter-mile radius of Neighborhood West remains in single family. So we're preserving a lot of the existing single family neighborhoods by just not touching the zone. It stays R5. The pink area is a transition where we're going from it's a transition from the higher density along Interstate to the single family, and we've used a zone that is an R2 zone, that's a medium multifamily zone. Particularly what you'll see there is row houses, duplexes, and if you can consolidate a couple of lots, you might see some small apartments. And we also want to ensure that the quality of this new development in this area is high. And this area doesn't have design review, but it does have, in the plan district, some compatibility standards. And this is an example of the R2 zoning, which is primarily what we have in the transition zone. These are some row houses in the Overlook neighborhood. And this is a new development in the Arbor Lodge neighborhood in the R5 zone. We also are also proposing a neon sign district. These are some good examples of the neon signs that I talked about earlier along Interstate. We have made some amendments to the sign code so that these signs can be moved without meeting all of the sign regulations. And we're hoping that that helps preserve some of these signs. We also, in the community design guidelines, are putting a guideline that talks about using neon in new development. And we were really happy to see that the Overlook Heights condominiums at their ground level coffee shop added a new neon sign. So this is hopefully the way that people will be using neon in the future. Transportation. We want to foster a multimodal urban street environment with an emphasis on pedestrian, bicycle, and stormwater management. A lot of these slides that you see here are from the Sunday Parkways, which was a really successful event a couple of weeks ago. And these are the streets that we have identified Maryland, or Montana, and Concord as east-west routes through the corridor. And as I said, we are working with PDOT to create special right-of-way standards. And the special right-of-way standards are based on the recommendations in the plan's urban design concepts. And one of the most important is, of course, making it easy to get around by bike, by bike and by walking throughout the district, but also to improve the connections across I-5. And in these slides, you see a picture of the Failing Street Bridge to your left, and to your right, the Bryant Street Bridge. And then on top is just one of the very wide streets that go across and connect the two. Open space, the green along the corridor is the open space areas, and the kind of the brownish color are the schools. And if we start from the top, we have in Kenton, there's Kenton Park over here that's not even on this map. And then you go down and you have the Kenton School. And then further down is the Ockley Green School. And off to the east is Peninsula Park. And then as you travel further down, there's Patton Park, which there's a slide. The top slide on the right is Patton Park. It's under construction, it just received a lot of pretty massive renovation. We also have Beach School is down here, and then this is anchored by Overlook, which again is the slide to your right. One of the things that we heard a lot from people was concern about the Kenton School site. That this is now, Portland Public School still owns it, but it's being leased to a private school, and there's concern about when it redevelops. We want to continue to have some component of open space. And so the Planning Commission's recommendation is to identify on the urban design concept map, which you see to your right, that this is a site that when it redevelops should contain a component of open space. And I think you'll hear from Portland Public Schools that this is an idea that they support having a master planning process in the future when they're more certain about the site, that it does retain a component of open space. And then I promised I wouldn't get too much into the details, but I have to talk about the height and the floor area ratio, because it's kind of a confusing thing, and I know that you've heard a lot about concerns about it. If you look, on page 55 of the plan, we have a map that shows in the blue what the special FAR, the floor area ratios are, and on the right, the red, what the special heights are. And I've added another map that I'm hoping kind of simplifies what the process to how we've got to where we've gotten with our height proposal. If you look on the right, the areas in the red are places, if this was in our proposal right now, places that you could go to 100 feet maximum building height. And those are the RH, the high residential zoning that is within 1,000 feet of a light rail. So if you look at the map on the left, it's all, pretty much throughout the corridor. the neighborhood was very unsettled about having such a large amount of land that was 100 feet throughout the corridor. And from an urban design perspective, it doesn't even put the most height right at the station areas where we want to see more activity. So the proposal that went to the Planning Commission and the Design Commission had one place, the Prescott Station, where there's 100-foot maximum height. And that was there because, as I was talking about, that is a really good place for an urban, vibrant, mixed-use area. And so that's the one place in the corridor that, by right, you can go to 100 feet. The orange area is at the Killingsworth Station, at the Lombard Station, and at a focal point up in Kinton, where the interstate bends, and along the freeway, there's a proposal that you could have 85 feet maximum height, and that just gives you a little bit more height than the 75 in the RH and the 65 in the employment zones, which are the predominant zones in the corridor. And then, so that was a proposal that went to the Design and Planning Commission, and their proposal and their recommendations or amendments to this proposal was to allow a little higher building, like 125 feet, if you would go through an extra design review, And the idea behind that was that they saw that you could get a higher quality building, an actual building that would higher quality building with having more flexibility. Again, we're not increasing the FAR. So it's not an increase in density. It's just an increase in building flexibility by being able to go to 125 feet. So before I go through the actions that we'd like you to take today, I wanted to make some acknowledgments. I wanted to acknowledge the community in general, for and especially the people that work so hard on this. This was not an easy process, and it was not a short process. It took a long time, and it was a lot of hours and a lot of really complex issues that we grappled with, and there was a lot of folks that really rolled up their sleeves and did a lot of good work in terms of trying to understand the balances between some of these decisions that we were making. I also want to acknowledge the people that questioned what we were doing along the way, the question, is this the right zone? Is this the right setback? These questions really allowed us to dig deeper into the proposal, made the CAG think, made staff and the design and the Planning Commission really think about what the trade-offs were and were these the right recommendations. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge the Planning Commission and the Design Commission for their review. This is a volunteer group that has a lot on their plate, and they had this on their agenda for about 3 months between the time we briefed them and the time they actually made recommendations. So I think you'll find that the quality of the work in the plan reflects, again, their dedication and really good thinking behind the plan. So with that, what we would request is that you adopt the plan, and there would be amendments to the community design guidelines to create special character statements for the interstate. We'd also request that you amend the Portland Comprehensive Plan map and zoning map, and also amend Title 33, the zoning code, and Title 32, the sign and related regulations. And we also have an amendment to Exhibit E that we would like you to accept.
Questions from the commissioners?
I just have a question by way of a point of clarification, Julia. And by the way, thank you for the briefings that you gave me in my office. It was very helpful leading up to this. At Prescott Station, where you now have the red grid, which mm-hmm. I guess signals you could go to 100 feet
right
there, my understanding is that covers Fire Station 26? Is that part of that package?
I believe it does.
So that's a significant, but that's a significant piece of property within that area that is not slated for development.
Redevelopment, correct.
Just want to make sure I.
Okay. Good. Is that it?
Courtney?
Yeah, I just wanted to just mention real quickly the relation. We had a great working relationship with PDC and the Bureau of Planning and did a significant traffic analysis and traffic impact analysis on the rezoning proposal, and we've, as you found in your findings, have met state, local, and regional policies and goals as a part of that analysis. And April wanted to let people know that we have copies of the right-of-way standards here if people in the audience would like to look at those, because we'll be continuing to be working on those throughout the summer. And we're both here for questions.
Questions?
Not yet.
Thank you. We'll stick around for questions.
Good.
Thank you.
I would like to invite up the invited speakers, Andre Baugh, Tim Eddy, Eric Gale, and Chris Duffy. Could Andre, you're first up.
Okay. Andre Baugh, Portland Planning Commissioner, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm pleased to forward this plan to you on North Interstate. I think it is the first of many plans you'll see that is the new urban development that will be coming forward that includes transit, density, you know, close to schools, and it's going to create a vibrant neighborhood. As the Planning Commission, we feel strongly that this is the long-range plan going forward that really brings transportation and housing goals together. We do believe also that there are some concerns that the neighborhood residents did put forth, and we did hear those concerns around height as we had our hearings. The one thing I would say is that we would also emphasize in our support that we look at making sure that this plan does not displace members of the community or the businesses as we redevelop it. And PDC has made a commitment to that effort to develop some plans and tactics to ensure that the development of this plan works well. The plan, and I'll address the height issue in a sense. The plan and the height, for my standard, is one that is a trade-off. This is a new existing, you have an existing neighborhood with transit, you have a TIF neighborhood, and the Planning Commission wrestled with height as an area that, how do we put height next to a freeway along transit to enable really a vibrant neighborhood for the future. And the trade-off was, from our standpoint, to have those buildings that want to go through to get the extra height, to go through the rigors of a design commission. And that rigor, we felt, gave the neighborhood an opportunity to come back in and talk about what they'd like to see, address their concerns, from not only materials to the design of the building and, you know, balconies or whatever. So it's an opportunity for the neighborhood we saw to come back in and talk about what does that building look like, how does it face the neighborhood, and address their concerns from a building standpoint. The North Interstate also does a number of other things from a grassroots standpoint. It looks at and preserves the neon signs that are out there today, and we'll celebrate that. And I think that with an existing neighborhood brings much more character to that neighborhood long term as you look at the development of a neighborhood. And the last thing is we would urge you to continue to talk with the Portland Public Schools parks for the Kenton site. As was mentioned in the presentation, we felt strongly that that should be an open space and continue that opportunity. Just real quickly, I think this is a exciting opportunity for you, and as the commission thought is, again, this really is the future of Portland from a standpoint of, as you look at the expansion of light rail into existing neighborhoods, how do those neighborhoods look how do they feel, how do they grow, and from a density standpoint, how do they function? And from a transit standpoint, you know, it's an encouragement of a transit-oriented bike, pedestrian, how do you manage stormwater, and those things are key, as along with open space. If it works here, and we think you need to keep your eye, and we will too, keep our eye on how it works. But if it works here, we can use this as a model for other existing neighborhoods that are going to face the same challenge as we go forward and look at the Portland plan. Thanks. Any questions?
What was the Planning Commission's, could you tell us more about the Planning Commission's or the process discussion of height?
The process discussion of height was, we looked at and we heard a consideration of, there's a trade-off in the height, if you will. There's actually a decrease in height in a lot of the areas that we actually reduced the height in some areas, and we traded that height, if you will, along the freeway to the 125 feet. The discussion in much of the discussion we heard from many of the members of the community was the concern for the visibility to see back into the neighborhood. Could you see the visibility of the neighborhood from the buildings? And potentially the disproportionate that height relative to the rest of a neighborhood, because you are, the neighborhood does go back into an R5, just a few streets off of interstate. It's an R5 neighborhood, so you're talking about fairly single-family dwellings and that how that would look. Again, our kind of resolution was a lot of input from Tim and the Design Commission in hearing about how can we give designers flexibility to make that look good in a neighborhood. We knew we were not increasing the FAR, so we're not increasing density in any manner. We're just looking at how that building looks in specific nodes along a transit street. And that discussion was really between us. In all honesty, I will tell you I was not a fan initially of the height, and really the design flexibility and the ability for the residents to come back into the design commission and say, we don't like this, we'd like this changed, really convinced me to support the plan.
How do we know that, how do we measure success of this corridor plan?
I think from my standpoint and a Planning Commission standpoint would be that we're building first. There's a couple of things that we're building, buildings that are truly, I think, utilizing the design standards to get, in most people's minds, a building that's appropriate. I think the second standard would be that that we're maintaining the residents and the businesses that want to stay in that neighborhood. And from a number of standpoints. And third, we're putting businesses and residents into the neighborhood that are utilizing transit. Because if we heard clearly, if we put a lot of cars into that neighborhood, it's not going to function. So it really has to be to function, businesses and neighborhoods that are going to utilize the transit system, that are going to look good, and that's a function of that design process. And if the design process is not working, I think that's really a standard that you can look at and say, are they taking advantage of the design process to build, to fashion a better looking building, a building that fits with, not everybody's concerns, but I think that addresses many of the concerns. And I'll let Tim talk about some of those design standards, but I think that's some of the standards to look at. What is the modal splits of the resident, the new residents that come there, and how do we encourage them to even get higher modal splits?
Thank you.
Mayor, Commissioners, I'm Tim Eddy, a member of the Design Commission, and we were fortunate enough to have four hearings on this plan before the Design Commission, and saw, I would say, quite a lot of neighborhood participation. And I participated in a Planning Commission hearing at Jefferson High School about 2 months ago with respect to the plan. I guess I'll start by saying that there was work done on the plan by the staff planners through the process. We saw it evolve, and the Design Commission strongly supports the plan that's being put forward at this point. Some of the elements of the plan that I think we found to be very exciting and saw a lot of excitement within the neighbors in the neighborhood included the neon sign district and the opportunity that provides for the interstate corridor to really develop a character of its own that stretches all the way from Overlook to Kenton. It is a transitional zone. If one looks 30, 40 years down the road and tries to imagine what that area will look like relative to Vancouver, Washington, downtown Portland, and as a transition between those two, both from the perspective of the freeway and the travel on light rail. It's a very important area of our city. And I will jump right ahead to the height issue. We encouraged providing greater flexibility in specific and strategic areas of the plan for designers, architects, and developers to configure buildings that would fit their sites well and enhance the neighborhood. And you ask, what would make this a success, and what would make this plan a success? And I think, and this is maybe personal opinion to some extent, but success is leveraging the investment in the transit system that's already there, and providing great opportunities for developments to happen that will spawn buildings that will create and enhance that sense of place and create a sense of place along there, along the interstate corridor, and to reinforce the real positive aspects of that area. That said, we looked at the station areas as specific opportunities. Those are the areas where folks are most likely to walk, where projects may be able to reduce parking to some extent, vehicle parking, and where configuring buildings at a higher height, even without increased density, may help to enhance and provide greater open space and light and air at those areas. We also suggested that the same be done along in the strip along the I-5 freeway for a couple of reasons. One is those are tougher sites to develop. They are next to the freeway, and one of the advantages that they have is the opportunity for greater and longer views, and to give designers and developers the opportunity to capture those, and could help to make them more successful, and also give the neighborhood an interesting edge, quite frankly, from the thousands and thousands of people who pass up and down the freeway corridor. The suggestion that a greater height would be allowed with further design review, an increased level of design review, we felt would give adjacent neighbors and the community at large an opportunity to participate, and as we see in other areas of the city, and to impact those designs in a way that improves them and enhances the neighborhood. And what we're concerned about is really to avoid an unintended consequence of forcing the density that's allowed in this area into lower building blocks. There is a 85-foot height limit in some of these areas, which is really about 20 feet higher than the allowed height for a wood frame, a five-story wood frame structure over a concrete podium. And it was our specific concern that if that 85-foot height limit was in place, that it's very likely that the majority of the buildings would be forced into that specific construction type, which we felt could artificially create forcing that density into a very predictable scale and box, likely quite static for the neighborhood, and have unintended consequences both economically and from a sense of place standpoint for that corridor. With that, that's, I think we're, from the Design Commission standpoint, we support the plan and support the special right-of-way standards, and as I mentioned earlier, fully behind the neon sign district. Thanks.
Questions? Thank you, folks. Chris?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor.
Can you commissioners. Come in towards you?
Thank you. I am very happy to be here this evening to lend my support to the rezoning plan for the interstate corridor. I am also submitting a letter of support from our Neighborhood Association Board, which I've submitted tonight, and another letter from our land use chair. I believe that the rezoning of this corridor at this time presents an exceptional opportunity for growth and development in our city, and it is critical for the future of this area. A major investment has already been made in the light rail system through the corridor, and zoning to promote higher density along the line is the next logical step to support that investment and to maximize its potential. It is also crucial that Portland do everything possible to encourage the use of mass transit, which this plan will obviously encourage. I can tell you that I originally was not particularly in favor of the high density planning that we had in the overlay that went back a number of years to the Albina plan. However, over a period of time and working with the rezoning project and learning more about what is necessary for the city of Portland, I have come around to be totally supportive of the plan as it is being presented to you tonight. We are expecting greater numbers of people to come to Portland in the next few years, and it's crucial that we provide opportunities for housing, for affordable housing, for job opportunities, and for places that people can live and work close to one another without needing to use cars to drive clear across the city. There is the potential for that kind of development here in the interstate corridor. And I think this plan allows that kind of potential to be developed. Our concern originally was primarily with the quality of building that we might get when we started to see development happen in our neighborhood. But through this plan and the requirements for design review in the larger, taller buildings that may eventually develop there, I think that we will get a neighborhood that is of high quality, with good design, and with solid construction that will last for years, and the type of homes and businesses out of that that people will be proud to live and work in. The higher buildings, reaching above 85 feet, we learned will be required to be built of steel and concrete rather than wood structures that will give it durability, and it will allow a different type of design and attract a different type of developer that we might get with shorter buildings that tend to be built out to the limits of the property, allowing very little space around them. The height will give us design and the opportunity to have green space around those buildings and more flexibility for the look of the neighborhood overall. We are concerned about green space in the neighborhood. This has been a big subject of discussion throughout this whole process, but we feel that by attracting good developers, good architects, we'll have green spaces incorporated onto the building sites. And we hope that as this plan progresses, there will be preservation of the existing green spaces and a possible development of new ones for the people who will come to this corridor. I have a personal vision for the development of Interstate. At its ideal, it would develop into an area that provides housing and workspaces through the EX designations that we have, and that could become a corridor known for green building practices and an interest in sustainability. I am hoping that this development will attract new businesses to settle there that deal with green technology and energy use technology, businesses that we may not have even seen in the Portland area before, but that will meet the needs of our future and where people can work and live in close proximity, eliminating the use for vehicle traffic in the area. This plan, I think, captures that as well as anything possibly can, and I hope that it will be accepted, and I hope that in the future you will encourage business development along this corridor also to meet the needs of our future in the city. And that's going to be something I will personally be lobbying for over the next few years. And I have to say that as a member of the Urban Renewal Area Committee for Interstate, I think the proposed plan will help to meet the goals of the Urban Renewal Group as well as the goals of the neighborhood for development, and will be in good compliance with the Portland plan that is developing now also.
Thank you. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, Chris.
Is Mr. Gale here?
Yeah.
Please state your name for the record, and you have, go ahead and speak.
Okay. I didn't want to sit on anyone's lap there. My name is Eric Gale. I'm the chair of the Overlook Neighborhood Association, which covers the 55% of the corridor. The letter I've submitted today and we'll touch on here was approved unanimously by the Neighborhood Association last night. This is a huge project for us, and we've worked very hard over the past year and a half educating ourselves and each other. We've discussed it at every board meeting and general meeting since September. We've had multiple special meetings and a constant stream of articles and postings on our email list and newsletter. And I think these efforts have been reflected in both the quantity and quality of the comments submitted by Overlook residents at various stages. Overall, the planning staff did a great job of communicating with us, and Julia Giesler particularly deserves a lot of praise. However, not surprisingly, we do have a number of concerns, particularly with significant last-minute changes to the maximum heights. On the heights, in the proposal presented to the public on April 10th, the height limits for RH zones range from 65 to 100 feet. At the time, we objected to these increases over the base zone up limit of 65 feet. And I'd like to note that within the zoning code now allows for 100 feet heights within 1,000 feet of a light rail stations, but that when the Albina Community Plan was adopted in 1993, which this plan was based on, that rule, that zoning code was not in effect, and it was 65 feet. And I think that's kind of significant in terms of discussions of trade-offs that we're giving up height here, bringing height there. Anyway, neighbors were shocked when, after nearly a year and a half of community involvement with no mention of heights over 100 feet, the design and planning commissions proposed what have been called height opportunity areas with the height limits of 125 feet. This is a significant change that, as a community, we have not had the opportunity to study or discuss. Without other examples to compare, we worry that it would be intimidating and out of scale. Thinking is that with the development of the Portland plan, the concept of height opportunity areas will likely become more developed and well thought out. And we would like to request that the consideration of these height opportunity areas be postponed until that time. Essentially addressing, at this point, there's a lot of uncertainty of what it would look like, what would be prohibited if we didn't have these areas, what would be permitted if we did have them, what it would look like. There's not really a precedent and not a lot of information, and certainly almost no opportunity for community discussion of this, and it seems we're not quite sure what'll happen in terms of, you've got the FAR ratios of 4 to 1, so if you're going to actually achieve these 125 feet, you would essentially have to leave two-thirds of your property undeveloped and to build your very tall, skinny tower. And we're not sure if we're just opening up a can of worms for later on increasing FAR ratios. If you're a developer and you have this height opportunity, it seems a lot easier.